Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. My guest today is William English, who I've had on in the recent past. William is here to share with us his knowledge of events that had taken place and his knowledge of what had happened with Paul Benowitz, who was a investigator in New Mexico, and who knew a lot about what was going on around Archuleta Mesa. The Manzano weapons storage area, UFOs, etc. William will also tell us what he knows about Dulce, because William had done a lot of investigations back in the day, and he knew some of the key players. So, without any further ado, William English, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you.
I'd like your thoughts on Paul Benowitz. He had really not been given his due over the years since his passing. I think you mentioned he passed away in 2003, but he did a lot of research in northern New Mexico as it relates to aliens, to grays, underground bases, and possible military knowledge of all of that. Could you tell us what you know about Paul Benowitz and his work?
Well, originally I encountered Paul Benowitz while I was working with AFRO in Tucson, Arizona. My initial introduction to him was through a report that we had received from him to AFRO, and the AFRO receptionist secretary had mentioned that she had just received this report from Benowitz and wanted to know if I would be interested in taking a look at it. I said, sure, I'd be interested. And what I read was pretty astounding information at the time. The original story was that Paul had been driving through the area when he started seeing UFOs apparently landing and people or things getting out of it, walking around, and then getting back into it and taking off again. Interestingly enough, he mentioned Gabe Valdez, who was a state policeman for the state of New Mexico, who apparently was with him when he spotted these things. And for many years, Gabe verified the fact that Benowitz had been seeing these things. Now, with regard to Dulce and underground bases and that kind of thing, he never mentioned anything with regards to underground bases simply because he had no access to them. But during the course of his research, had indicated that there was rumors flying around that there were underground bases. And as time passed, more and more witnesses apparently came forward to verify the fact that there were underground bases and that at some point, there was an attack between the aliens and a military operation that was attempting to dig an underground military installation there. And the story goes that as they were digging, they had broken through into various chambers, which were unknown at the time. And that there was a big firefight that took place, and that we lost quite a few servicemen during this battle. We got no way of really proving this other than personal testimony from some of these witnesses, one of which presented a rather detailed account of what he had seen. And yet, several weeks later, he was found dead. With a rubber hose wrapped around his throat. And with regards to Paul, he kept pressing the issue. And as a result, he had been involuntarily committed to a mental health facility where he underwent electroconvulsive therapy, which is basically electroshock therapy, and had been diagnosed as being manic, slightly schizophrenic, among other things. And he spent the rest of his life on medications. And he refused after a while to even discuss the subject. And this is where it gets really convoluted because of the fact that All of a sudden, these stories started coming out. People started trying to contact Benowitz at his home in Albuquerque and trying to get details of the information that he supposedly had, and he refused to talk to anybody. Gabe Valdez, on the other hand, would confirm that, yeah, they saw UFOs landing. They saw cattle and being taken aboard craft, and that kind of thing. But even after a while, Valdez, I think it was probably because of his position with the state police, started shying away from any kind of discussion with regards to what took place or any of that other kind of stuff. And there are certain truths that have to be said here. Throughout the years, the story has been embellished. It has grown. We are suddenly under attack. There's an underground base at Dulce and that kind of thing. Yet we have no way of proving it. And Benowitz's life was completely destroyed by this. And when just before Valdez died, he made the comment that, yeah, there's stuff happening out there, but it was all human related. It had absolutely nothing to do with aliens. And my question is, why would he say something like that?
Yes, he could have said something like that earlier instead of waiting until after Benowitz had passed away. It seems like he had a change of heart.
Yeah, and just before he passed away, I get the impression that Valdez's comments were sort of a deathbed declaration, but I don't know. Valdez was in his late 60s when he passed. At this stage of the game, who knows? Now, I do know that there have been several groups that have gone up to Dulce who have found what appears to be ventilation systems coming up out of the mountain, but who knows at this stage of the game? And to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think anybody really has got the moxie or the ability to go up there on reservation land and get their permission to investigate thoroughly what is going on, if anything at all. This is turning into one of those UFO mysteries that I don't know if it will ever be solved.
Did you ever have discussions with Gabe Valdez? Did he say anything other than confirming that he and Paul Benowitz, or Paul Benowitz, had seen craft and had seen UFO activity?
I met with Gabe once. This was back in 1988, 89. And he confirmed that, yeah, he was with Benowitz and he saw something take off and land, but that was as far as he would go. When I tried to contact Benowitz about this, I kept getting the runaround from his family and everything. I never was able to get in direct contact with Benowitz.
And about what time period did Benowitz come under psychiatric care?
He came under psychiatric care probably around the late 70s, early 80s.
So that would have been 20 some odd years that he'd been under psychiatric care and presumably on those meds all that
Yeah.
time.
Yeah, and unfortunately, my wife, who does suffer from mental health issues, takes a lot of the same kind of medications that Benowitz was taking. So it does have an effect on memory, on comprehension, cognitive abilities, and that kind of thing. And his family was very protective of him.
Who made a determination that he needed a psychiatric evaluation?
I believe it was I believe it was his family that made the determination because he had become obsessed with this and they finally petitioned a judge. Now you got to remember, New Mexico is one of those rare states that has laws on the books which protect the rights of the mentally ill. The problem with New Mexico is that even though they have these laws, they do not fund them. So they had to convince a doctor to consider involuntary committal. The doctor had to go to a judge. The judge had to sign off on it. And then he had to be admitted to the psychiatric facility, which in this case was University of New Mexico, where he also underwent electroconvulsive therapy. And I have experience with the University of New Mexico with regards to ECTs because of my wife. And I can tell you, it's like a factory there. They roll them in, 10 at a time, and give them the paralytic drugs, put them on the oxygen, strap them down, zap them, and move on to the next bed. It's pretty barbaric, even in this day and age.
And the name implies electroconvulsive. They would shock them, I think, directly to the brain, if I'm not mistaken. And that the intended effect was it was supposed to induce convulsions at some level.
Originally, electroshock therapy was they strapped them down, stuck a mouthpiece in them, and then zapped them bilaterally with two electrodes, one on either side of the brain, rather indiscriminately. Nowadays, they've made it a little bit more humane, but at the same time, what they do is they strap the patient to a bed. They give them a paralytic drug to stop muscle contracture for two reasons. First of all, to stop muscles from contracting to the point where they actually break bones. But also, when they do this, they have to put them on forced oxygen feed. Then they put the electrodes to the head and they increase the voltage gradually to the point where they start to have a convulsion, and then they stop. And then they administer the antidote for the paralytic drug and let the patient regain consciousness naturally. And usually, this method serves to basically reset the brain. Sometimes it's effective, and sometimes it's effective for a little while, but it's never a permanent solution.
One time I was attending a lecture and I was accompanied by a friend who'd been in nursing for many years. And we attended a lecture of someone here in Australia who'd recounted an abduction experience on the beach, like in the 1960s. And the way he was giving his story, he kind of stammered a little bit, and he would have these pauses in his conversation, in his dictation, rather, his diction. And then afterwards, my nursing friend said to me, she felt the guy had gone through electroconvulsive shock therapy because of the way he spoke. And she wondered if, especially back in the day when he had the experiences, started relating the experiences in the early 70s. It would have been quite taboo back then. And he may have found himself pulled into the psychiatric world where he received the electroconvulsive shock therapy. Anyway, that was her conclusion, that he had been subjected to that because of the way he stammered and the way his eyes kind of flickered and what have you. So, I mean, that really stuck with me. I wondered what the poor guy had gone through. Do you know how long Paul Benowitz had been subjected to the electroconvulsive shock therapy?
It was my understanding that he had been subjected to it for years.
Yeah, that would have scrambled everything as far as memories is.
Well, memories, cognitive ability, and what people don't realize about ECTs is the fact that it does create scar tissue on the brain itself. And eventually, that scar tissue will cause what they refer to as vascular dementia, which can manifest itself in all kinds of ways. Loss of short-term memory, loss of long-term memory. It depends. It's been my experience that somebody who undergoes ECTs can quite arbitrarily remember something that took place 30 years ago, like it was yesterday, and then at the same time can't remember something that happened 5 minutes ago.
So the brain is fundamentally rewired, and also you have the trauma on top of that, being subjected to that. Over the years, have you had discussions with others about Paul Benowitz's case? I know that others back in the day, Wendell Stevens among them, and others had looked into his case. Had there ever been something of a roundtable discussion between you and other investigators of that time about Paul and about his what you knew about his findings?
Well, Wendell and I spoke about this at great length. Wendell was of the opinion at the time that there was something going on that nobody seemed to be totally aware of, particularly with regards to Benowitz's situation and what he had seen. Wendell had made the statement to me that he felt that Benowitz was being led around by the nose, which is entirely possible. Bill Moore had claimed at one point that he was being used to feed Benowitz false information. He made this statement publicly at the 1989 MUFON conference in Las Vegas, Nevada, which pretty much made him persona non grata in the US UFO community. Of course, Benowitz wasn't there to talk to anybody, and nobody was able to contact him with regards to what Moore had said. There's something else that needs to be clarified here, too. There was a nasty rumor going around in documents and stuff that is still floating around on the web that Bill Moore had at one point been the head of APRO. And this is simply not true. Bill Moore was never the head of APRO.
Well, that's interesting because I didn't know until you just told me that Moore had stated that it was Benowitz that he had done this to. I did see snippets of the conference in question, the LA Las Vegas rather MUFON convention, and I read accounts afterwards where it was stated that he had admitted to feeding disinformation to a particular researcher, and
Yeah.
apparently that he had somehow gotten involved with intelligence agents of the US government, perhaps of the US Air Force. Now, that adds a whole new light to it. Now, what if, playing devil's advocate here, he was instructed to say that and mention Benowitz in particular to plant the seed, perhaps, that whatever Benowitz claimed to know had been fed to him and was intended to muddy the waters. But what if, where there's smoke, there's fire, so to speak, that they went to the trouble of having Moore make those claims in a way to discredit Paul Benowitz? Not so much for worry that Bill Moore was going to take the heat for doing this, and of course he did, because what he did was unconscionable, essentially. I mean, throwing another researcher under the bus and admitting feeding disinformation to him. I just have to wonder what the purpose behind that was. It seems to me now, with the benefit of hindsight and what you just said, that if anything, it was made to make Benowitz look bad, and Moore wasn't really concerned about his stock in the field.
Well, Moore, I got the distinct impression that Moore was pretty much fixed for life at that point when the MUFON conference took place. So he didn't really have to do any more UFO research or write any more books with Berlitz or any of that other kind of crap. And that he was playing devil's advocate, so to speak. It wasn't too long after that MUFON conference that Moore just sort of basically faded away into history, and we didn't hear much from him ever again. So I think Moore was kind of ready to get out of it at that point.
Well, for a while, and I'm trying to remember the details, somewhat hazy after all this time, but he was involved at some level with, if you remember when the Majestic papers were leaked out to Jamie Chandiray, and eventually Jamie Chandiray and Stanton Friedman, if memory serves, did the background research on the Majestic papers to determine its authenticity. Part of me, and of course I could be wrong about this, I'm just going by memory, I think was Bill Moore part of the effort to get the information out about the Majestic Papers, or did he try to discredit them? What do you remember from that aspect?
To be honest with you, I don't remember a great deal with regards to Moore's involvement with the Majestic Papers. There were others that were involved with regards to that. The evidence that was presented at the time indicated that the papers were in fact real, but there was no quantifiable documentation or evidence other than circumstantial that indicated the validity of them.
What were some of the stories that had come out from Paul Benowitz's research coming in on the heels of all that? I have no way of confirming this or not, that apparently, according to some sources, he was doing research into the activity at Archuleta Mesa. And apparently, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul had something of an engineering or a scientific background as well.
Yes, he did. He owned a company in Albuquerque, a scientific company. One of the interesting things about Benowitz was that he had apparently developed a computer program that was able to translate radio signals that were detected in the area. I have no way of proving this, but that was one of the pre-existing stories. And of course, if it had been true, there was, it would have blown the lid off a whole bunch of stuff. Now, bear in mind too that Benowitz, during the course of his investigation, had accumulated over 26,000 feet of film of the Mesa and what took place there. All of a sudden, that film disappeared. Now, APRO at the time had been sent some of these films, and with the death of Jim and Coral Lorenzen and the ultimate dissolution of APRO and the sale of those files that APRO had and subsequent disappearance of those files, we've got no way of knowing what took place or what was on those films.
How about any documentation or any reports or analysis that Paul Benowitz had done? Did APRO wind up with any of that as part of this investigation?
APRO wound up with a great deal from Paul Benowitz. But like I said, when both Jim and Carl passed and the existing board of directors decided to dissolve APRO and sell the APRO records, I mean, there were filing cabinets, just several filing cabinets, just packed from top to bottom, front to back, with years' worth of records and films and reports and everything. And they sold them for $1,000 to a couple out of Phoenix, Arizona, who said that they were going to make those files available. And they disappeared. The couple disappeared, the files disappeared, nobody's been able to track them down. So I don't know. Interestingly, just recently here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, there is a movement to open up a UFO database filing repository here. And we hear about it occasionally. They're supposedly still working on it. And I have to ask the question of, what happens to all of the files that happened to be located at the UFO Museum in Roswell, New Mexico?
Was this group planning to access some of that information from the Roswell Museum or work with the people?
I have absolutely no idea. Nobody seems to be willing to answer my question with regards to that. To be perfectly honest with you, I haven't contacted the museum in Roswell to make inquiries. simply because of the fact that there's something more going on here than meets the eye. All of a sudden the government has started a new investigation arm. They're releasing what they have clearly identified as UFO footage. They are attempting to redesignate from UFO to UAF. I don't know whether to change and get rid of the stigma of UFO or whatever, unidentified aerial phenomena from unidentified flying objects, that kind of thing. A part of me says that there's something that's about to happen, but I don't know what. And to be perfectly frank with you, I'm not really sure we're ready for a full disclosure of what's taking place out there, if anything.
What's come from other researchers, and some of these researchers claim that this information came from Benowitz, but again, there's no way to confirm that. Some of the key players I've either never known or have lost contact with.
I have to look back at Benowitz. I have to look back at the years that have passed between Benowitz's death and Valdez's death. Quite honestly, if there's any new information out there, I have a tendency to think it's being made up.
When I had you on the show before, you talked about some frequent activity, UFO activity, in certain parts of New Mexico that you were familiar with. The Benowitz story is that a lot of it revolves around Archuleta Mesa. Now, independent of Paul's findings or what he was alleged to have investigated or researched, have you heard anything independently, like from other sources, other witnesses about any alleged activity in the Archuleta Mesa area?
Surprisingly enough, no. Logically thinking, if it was continuing, we would be hearing more of it. And I think that we would probably be seeing more evidence of it. Benowitz and Valdez, for some reason, just seem to have faded into history. I know that at some point, Linda Moulton Howe, who lives in Albuquerque now, had talked to Benowitz about cattle mutilations and that kind of thing. But she's been very tight-lipped about her meetings with Benowitz, if any. Any information that I have heard or seen has been old information.
Did John Lear ever have a discussion with Paul Benowitz, or did he ever look into Benowitz's work?
No, John never had the opportunity to talk to Benowitz. John was very much involved in other things with regards to what was taking place at Area 51 and a few other things. John's interest basically started while he was working for Air Americas.
That would have been like in the 1960s,
Yeah.
because I remember he came out with that paper, the John Lear hypothesis, which sent a lot of his detractors into a mouth foaming frenzy. And
Oh, God, did it ever?
I was wondering, where he'd obviously he's not he's going to protect his sources. I was wondering if any of that had come from Benowitz, but as far as that's not the case.
As far as I know, no. And John and I used to communicate with each other fairly regular basis up until his death this last year. For some reason, John's life just suddenly caved in on itself. His wife is the rumor has it that his wife had tried to kill him a couple of times, and he was forced to leave the house. His daughters helped him move and everything. He had tons, I mean, absolutely thousands of records that he had collected over the years. Part of the problem was is that what was he going to do with those records, and what did he do with the records when he moved? At this stage of the game, I would think that the biggest effort should be placed into finding those records. John was pretty meticulous about what he researched, and he was a crafty devil too. He would deliberately plant the lie just to see if he could catch you at it.
Well, he must have been subject to some of the skullduggery that had been going on to this day, but it was particularly evident back in those days when there was still this intense effort to marginalize the subject and keep it in the realm of taboo. Because the way the UFO community en masse rose up against him when he came out with this hypothesis, He talked about things which we now pretty much take for granted, implants, alien abductions, the relationship to cattle mutilations.
It's interesting. John was able to dig a lot of this stuff out, but he did it on his own money. He very rarely sought the help of groups like MUFON or HAPRO or any other organization. His investigations were pretty much private. George Knapp and him were very close friends, and Knapp would be the one to tell you whether or not John's work and investigations were legitimate. Now, Knapp and John did quite a bit of research into Area 51, and some of that research overlapped into the Grudge Blue Book 13 material, particularly with regards to power systems.